It's Kika.
Drea here.
Hey, y'all. It's Camille.
And it's Cookie. As always, like and subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on social media at Afros and Combos on IG. Email us at afrosandcombos@gmail.com. Check out the website at afrosandcombos.com. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Wonderful.
Doing great.
That's great. Now listen, we got a guest on the podcast again. Man, we coming up in the world. We got guests coming on to the show. Hello. But this one is going to be led by Camille, so I'm actually going to turn the reins over to Camille to intro our special guest. Take it away, Camille.
So I'm so excited about this episode because this person, we went through some drama at work. We had to deal with microaggressions, implicit bias. So I'm so excited to have Miss Aisha Cawley on the podcast today. She hails from PG County, Maryland. You heard me? Maryland.
Yes.
That's how y'all say it. She is an alum of Towson. HU, Howard U, that one. And she's also a Meharry alum. And today we wanted to talk about is the divide between the Asian American community and the African American community. Because you guys know it's Asian American Pacific Islander Month. I think I got all of the
yes.
there. And the hot topic has been the divide.
There's a heritage in there.
Stop. Yeah. Look, don't feel bad. My mama didn't even know it was this month.
But we've noticed a great divide. I don't know if you guys have seen it on social media, but I've seen quite a bit on social media, especially with the passing of laws for some communities versus other communities. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. So Aisha, thank you for joining us today.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
So, Aisha, what is your ethnic background and how you identify racially? And how did you even come to that racial identity?
All right. So, my ethnic background, I'm Black and Filipina. Racial background, that's a little bit more complicated. You know, as a lot of people know, race is a social construct. And so, for the longest, you couldn't identify as two or more racial identities. So for me as a child, I consider myself Black, especially because as a little girl, my father is the one that's Black. We had a conversation about our Blackness and he broke it down. He was like, you're Black. And he taught me and emphasized like how important it is to be proud of that and that people will always look down and say negative things. And he wanted to empower me. Never had that conversation with my mother. I just knew she was from a different country. And so growing up, I'm like, all right, I'm Black, but I lived on a military base. So everyone's mixed because military men, you know, go out into the world and do whatever. So I was used to that. But first time going to school, I remember it was in PG County. And so school predominantly Black, very few Asians. And I look at the roll and the roll says there was three Asians in the classroom. And I'm confused because I was counting two because there was two Chinese girls in my class. And then it dawned on me, my mom enrolled me as Asian. And so at the age of six, I'm in class pissed off. Cause I'm like, what you mean I'm Asian? I'm just like, I'm confused. I'm very like as a child, like getting a doll. I remember my mom buying me an Asian Barbie doll. And I was upset because like, although like I know I'm Asian, I don't identify visually because I don't have that straight hair. My mom does. I'm not as light, especially back then because I was always outside, so I had a tan. But I wasn't that light. I identify with curly hair and darker skin because I look at my dad. And so it was weird. And then growing up, the world's always like, all right, you're Black or you're Asian. But because I don't know my mom's language, it was like, I'm not Asian enough. Because my mom isn't Black. I wasn't Black enough. And so for the longest, probably, it wasn't until I got into college, it was into my freshman year of college, I mostly just identify as Black. Like I'll say, yeah, I'm Filipino because I don't want to disrespect my mother, but I would just identify as Black. get to undergrad, and I don't know, something about undergrad and just being in the space and being on my own and, you know, just trying to experience the world by myself without my parents' point of view. I started just integrating myself and just was like, all right, I had a, what was it? Somewhat of like a mentor in college who encouraged me to join the Filipino, what's that called? Little group on campus, whatever. And I really didn't want to, because I was like, I'm about to be annoyed. I was like, it was cool. Like, we can share some similar things. But when it came down to it, I was like, where's the Black Student Union at? But that, like, I also didn't grow up with Asian friends. They were either mostly mixed like me, but a lot of them were mixed with white. So I can't relate to them because I'm like, all right, you got that whiteness, and there's a lot of things you're not going to understand. And when you look a lot of half Asian, half white people, they look predominantly white. So they can have that privilege. But you look at me, one, I look racially ambiguous. Two, most people, unless they were like stationed in the Philippines, they don't know I'm Filipino. They don't know I'm Asian. And so I couldn't relate to them. But then as I got older, I had to learn, like, I have to do everything on my terms. And so, and then as the world started allowing you to check more than one box, I could be like, all right, I'm Black and Asian, but I don't prefer to identify with race because it's so just broad, especially because you can do Black, Asian, white, blah, blah, blah. And then they have a box for multiracial, but because you could be multiracial with so many different things, I don't like checking that box. Cause I'm like, nah, you could be white and Asian. You could be Hispanic and Asian. Like, there's so many different things. But so I prefer just go by I'm Black and Filipina, because then it's like I'm embracing both of my cultures. And I don't like just saying Asian, because first people think it's China. And I'm like, there's so many more Asians than Chinese. Yeah. No offense to them, but yeah.
Wow. That's a journey, but that's a beautiful journey.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, I know that's just the beginning, but I have a whole bunch of other questions based off that. But I'm keep it in there. So I remember you telling me this story. Like, y'all can't see her hair now, but her. So she has a little curl. She got a little wave, and then when she do her little wash and goes, it'd be a nice curl. But she told me that her mom gave her a Just For Me perm, so because her mom is angry, Filipino. Oh, wow. Because, and your hair is supposed to be straight. So that's just one instance I remember of our conversations. Oh. But did you have any other instances from, because you was with your Black family and you was with your Lola. So did you experience racism from both sides of your family or not? And not just like, you know, people think racism as a negative thing, but based on the definition of racism, not with ill intent, just lack of knowledge and ignorance. Can you share some of those experiences if you had them?
Absolutely. So, you know, my mom immigrated to the United States when she was 21. Was it 21? Yeah, 21. And so that was in 91. My grandparents came here March 2001. And, you know, so for a long time, I only saw pictures of them. And so if you know anything about Filipinos, the indigenous people, they're called the Aitas or the Aitas. And when the Spaniards came 400 some odd years ago, colonized and enslaved them, they called them Negritos. Negro mean Black, Ito mean little Black people, because they were very short and look African. So I saw my grandparents and my cousins in pictures, and I'm like, all right, they're like my complexion, whatever. And during the summertime, I'd spend time at my mom's house, and I would get yelled at, and they would say, "Hey, you're getting too dark." And I'm like, pause, what? What do you mean I'm getting too dark? Because I tan very, very well. And ever since I was a child, I always push back, and I always be like, excuse me? So I remember being like 11 years old. I'm like, did you forget my dad's black? Like, I'm half black. You know my daddy. Like, what do you mean I'm getting too dark? And so it was things like that, or going to the family reunion on my dad's side, and a lot of them not wanting to talk to us, or like my stepmom is also Filipino. And so they will look my stepmom up and down and wouldn't want to associate with her. And so because of that, my dad didn't want to go back home because they know they were upset about it. And I was just like, I'm not going to change or divorce my wife because like, I'm proud of my children. I love my kids. Like, yeah. You know, so it was things like that, within the family. And just, I had an aunt that was just like, you know, the whole, there's the whole, you talk like a white girl thing. And I'm like, I was like, I don't know what to do with all of this. Like, what do you want me to do? But yeah, my mom, yeah. But the thing about the hair, my mom had no idea to do with my hair. I didn't figure out how to do my hair until I was about 19, which is also when, you know, hair care really just boomed, especially for natural hair. But my mama put everything, like, oh my gosh. I used to put hair grease in my hair. That Murray's can of hair grease, the Ultra Sheen, the blue one. Oh, I still can smell it in my sleep. Like, like I, oh, lean against the bus and the window greasy. Oh, oh my God. Yeah. It just, oh, Lord. Yeah. So.
Oh, that brings up a great thing. So this is an aside. So y'all, her sister writes these dope papers. They get to write about stuff in college that we didn't get to write about. And she talks about her sister had COVID, and her sister has locks now. And she talks about in this paper how she's never been discriminated in the hospital before she had locks. Because first off, her mama always accompanied her. Now she grown, you know, she goes to the doctor herself. And she didn't have something that was overtly black. But since she got locks, she noticed being discriminated in the hospital. So I remember I was actually texting Asia that day when she was in the hospital. And we was like, you know, we accustomed to being black. So we got, you know, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to say. This is what you need to, this is how you gonna do it. Like, that's, Asia was there just coaching her through it because that was her first experience. Like being discriminated because of her black side, because she had locks. Ain't that crazy?
Wow.
Wow.
But my next question for you. So as a person of both Asian and African American descent, like both of your cultures, girl, have been attacked seriously, vehemently these past few years with the African American community. We got, like, I don't know if y'all seen the comments about, like, people posted about George Floyd. They are still coming with the comments. And then from all the Asian, the hate crimes, we got the Kung Fu virus. People are just drop kicking Filipino women walking down the street. How have you been coping with it? Like, both of your cultures have been attacked in these past few years. How have you been coping with it?
You know, it's weird because I remember when, you know, the shooting in Atlanta when those Asian women died and were murdered. And I forgot my conversation with our former coworker, Victoria. But a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, like blah, blah, blah. And it was like, violence against Asian people, specifically Asian women, is not new at all. And that's what people fail to realize. Like, you think about the amount of, like, how many Asian women are trafficked all over the world and then into this country. Like, that's violence in itself. I mean, that also goes on, you know, in with young black girls. But because it's now at the forefront, and I think it's because you have the younger generation, because of the Black Lives Matter movement, they're like, you know what? We can protest. We can bring this to awareness because people always see Asians as being timid and like, we're not going to do anything. So when stuff started occurring for me, it's like, it was not, I don't want to say normal, but at the same time, you know, our media likes to normalize all this violence. But it was just like, yeah, it happens. And of course, I'm fearful for like my mother and my grandmother, but I'm like, this has always been a constant fear that something may happen or people might be discriminatory against them. But because with Black people, you know, much more oppressed compared to like everyone else, and we constantly see Black trauma on TV, I feel like that affects me more and just drains my energy. So with combination of having both of them at the same time, I'm like, all right, I got to step away from social media. As much as I want to educate others about what's going on, I got to take me time. And it's also, it's not the job of the oppressed to teach the oppressors. Like, no, y'all need to evaluate yourselves.
Say that again. We need to hear that one more time. What did you say?
It is not the job of the oppressed to teach the oppressors, because it's not like you created this system. You are the reason why we have all this discourse, and not only this country but the world. So it's your job to undo all the things that y'all been doing, period. Drops mic, Obama style.
Period, with a T, with a T at the end. But so a large number of Black people, as a community, we upset. We upset. You know, because we was a slave for 400 years. We still trying to get a seat at the table. I feel like we still got separate water fountains in some places. But and because of what's happening now, laws for I know I'm dramatic. Laws for like these laws for the Asian community, they have been passed like it seems like instantaneous. And I don't know the background, because there could have been some work going on for years, and we just seeing it come to fruition. But from the African American perspective, it looked like just yesterday y'all put in a petition, and now we have laws that are protecting you while they're not laws protecting African Americans. What is your stance on that as a person from both cultures? What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree, and I understand that standpoint, because it was like, it seems like yesterday hate crimes, quote unquote, started, and then now you got a bill passed, and it's just like, whoa, so we just streamlined this, but we're still fighting for, you know, people are still fighting for like a George Floyd bill. We're still fighting for Breonna Taylor. And it's like, all right, you can protect us, but you know, and it's not defending it. It's, you know, it goes back to the white supremacy. They're going to protect their model minority that they like to call Asians. Mm. They're going to want to protect them, you know, Asians, because they put Asians right underneath the white people. They're not white, but you're not Black, so we gonna help you out. And that's how they treat us and how they divide us. And it's like, part of you have to question, they're like, are you purposely doing this so that there's this divide continues and this animosity continues between these two minority groups? Because in reality, our issues that we have is rooted in white supremacy. The animosity that was created is because of them and how they have portrayed us in the media and have made us, and they made this assumption that a lot of Asians run with, that, oh, Black people are dangerous and blah, 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 blah. And so a lot of Asian people just ran with it. And because Asians are seen as timid and docile, and they're not going to speak up, they're like, all right, we'll help y'all out. Blah, 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 and all that stuff. So I completely, and I share the frustration that this Asian crime law passed. There was actually a report that as this was passing, more than 100 Asian American groups and LGBTQ groups actually opposed the bill, because it's like, all right, you're putting this bill in place, but in the reality, you're not addressing or telling us like how we're going to execute this law, how we're going to educate people on implicit biases. And it doesn't help Black and brown people with everything that's going on with them, police brutality and just racism in general. And they're, you know, a lot of them were like, well, if Black and brown people are not getting these same equal rights and having this protection, then we don't want it either. And so I think that's also important that not everyone was for this law that came into place. I definitely wasn't. It's just like, I get the point, but at the same time, it's kind of like, protect everyone from that hate, from a hate crime. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, remember, it's just like, do you remember there was this the white couple that was on their lawn holding guns? Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was like last year and they got arrested. Mm-hmm. Well, the husband is now running for, I think, Senate in Missouri. And I was like, you know, like, our, like, how do you address that? Like, if that was towards Asian people, how would you address that? So it's just a mess. It's just all a mess. And it's like, all right, you can say there's laws for this, but do people actually listen? Like,
that's another good point. But I never thought about the systemic approach of division that happens in America, especially with the Asian American and African American communities. Like, within the Asian community, where do these people get loans? Like, where can they build? Where can they open their businesses? We got Kim's around the corner. We got China King down the street. I was just like, I ain't never seen no China King in Brentwood. Yeah, is there a Chinese food place? I've never seen a... Well, there's not a beauty supply store in Brentwood, but I never thought about the systemic aspect of that until watching that Red Table Talk and listening to Lisa Ling. I was like, oh, this is an intentional divide between our communities. Let's partner them with us and separate us from the Blacks. I never thought of that until listening to that.
Yeah. I didn't either. And you see it all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say there are like Chinese restaurants in, like, for instance, Brentwood. But I noticed recently that aesthetically how it's portrayed, like the optics of it, is to make it as whitewashed as possible. So even the number one Chinese that is in Brentwood, the external sign looks so different than the number one Chinese that's like closer to like Antioch and in other different parts of the city. So even how the signage is, the building, the storefront, it's more appealing to that community that is predominantly white. So it exists, but how it's presented is almost like, let's present it in a manner that also aligns with the other establishments here.
I think I was just going to say, I wanted to chime in a little on that point. I think that's less of a, it's Chinese restaurants are trying to be closer to whiteness than it is just a business practice. Like, I mean, if you look at a McDonald's or not McDonald's, probably, I don't know if McDonald's is in Brentwood, but or a Wendy's, I know a Wendy's is in Brentwood. If you look at a Wendy's, they look different, right? If you look at a Taco Bell, they're going to look different just because of the caliber of people that are there. But to the extent that there is, so I'm just saying, I don't know that that is a great example of the divide, but there has been, and it goes back to like the history of this country to where, and I think a lot of the tension that's between the Black community, the Asian community as a whole, a lot of it stems from, one, seeing in current time, we're seeing like all of the minority groups, Asians included, LGBTQ included, everybody riding the wave and riding the backs of Black people. And I think when you have others who are able to achieve some type of recognition that we are still fighting for when we started the fight to begin with, I think that is naturally going to breed animosity. And then when you also trace back, like, there is history And there's a Supreme Court case. I was trying to look it up, but I can't remember the name of it. But I remember studying it in law school. There's a Supreme Court case where a Chinese petitioner was petitioning for Chinese people in America to be considered white, to be naturalized. And in the filing, he specifically says that...
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. He specifically says that Chinese people are not black. And in an effort to divide, because obviously those are second class citizens. We're not them. We're closer to white people. And as a result, we should have way more rights than you are extending to black people. So when you have stuff like that going on, and that is at the history of the relationship between black and Asian people, and then you I mean, obviously everything in this country is based off of history. Then you take it into the 90s. We were talking before we jumped on about the case where the Korean store owner, woman store owner, shot and killed a young black girl for what she accused a little black girl of stealing orange juice, shot her in the back of the head as the girl was leaving, and then got off on probation. So, I mean, all of these things are breeding tension between the two communities. And when then you see, oh, a hate crime bill gets passed, it's just like... Man, that was really easy. Wow, that was easy, right? But I also think it's to, and it, a lot of it goes to a stereotype too of, I mean, not, I mean, it got a hate crime bill, but it's not good and it's not beneficial to Asian people. It's perceiving Asian people as less of a threat than black people. You guys are, as you said, mentioned, you're timid, you're this, you're that. We can give them rights because they ain't going to present a threat to, you know, America. So, yeah, It's deep. It's deep.
Ooh, I didn't know that, girl. I didn't know that was...
Yeah. It's so deep. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me. So, like, you know, I remember earlier when I was talking about, like, with my grandparents telling me I was too dark, you know, a huge thing that, you know, here in America we deal with in another country is colorism. So, you know, Chinese people... Chinese and Koreans are the lightest of the light when it comes to Asians. And then you have people who are from Taiwan, the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, were darker. Mm-hmm. And also, like, our genetics are close to the genetics from people in Madagascar. We share those same genetics. And so, and, you know, these are also countries that bleach their skin. Like, my mom will buy lightener soaps for her face. And I'm like, Mom, stop doing it. Like, why? My cousins, they go to the beach. They're just under the umbrella. Like, they don't want to be in the sun. They want to be light because they associate darkness, something negative. If you're dark, it means you're poor and you work in the rice fields. Mm-hmm. And so you have that building up. So you are, so, you know, you're coming in, especially you're coming to this country and they're already looking at black people as dark. You got as black people as dark and they're bad people. And then you come into this society where you have so many, you have the media, you have so many white people going, oh, they're bad. So they're like, yeah, let's just go with the flow, which I don't agree with. And I hate, because it's just like, you can't let media dictate how you should interact with others, and, oh, because they said this person's horrible, that means collectively it's bad and they're bad. But yeah, it's difficult and it's deep and it's more than just, oh, we don't like each other. And it's like, no, it's so deep rooted in our history of this country and just in the history of so many countries in this world. And it's going to take a lot. I mean, I highly doubt, like, Jesus is going to come back before anything changes, for real. But it's a mess. Like, let's be real.
You're right. Well, that leads me, like, perfect segue into my next question. As a person of both the Asian and African-American community, what are some ways that you think each community can grow in understanding each other's experiences?
I think, I feel like the Red Table Talk was the perfect example, and that's actual dialogue and talking about it. But not just going like, okay, this is my experience. You know, this is what you experienced. That's also dive deep into the history and discuss it, because that's a big part of it. Like, let's talk about our issues. Why do we have these issues amongst each other? And then also the biggest thing, once we have that common ground, let's tackle the real issue, the real common denominator. And those are white supremacy.
Because we don't learn about Asian history in school either. Like, we was just talking before the podcast about the secret war in Laos. If I didn't watch that documentary, I would have known nothing about that. I didn't learn about slavery in the Philippines until 2 or 3 years ago from documentary. Like, all the knowledge that I have possessed has been from documentary and relationships with people. This was not in our history book. Just like African American history, all you get is the Rosa Parks and the Martin Luther King. And they like, and Harriet, my bad.
And Harriet.
And so if you don't look like Harriet or Martin Luther King.
Can't forget Harriet.
But that's all, that's the extent of history that we know. And even the aspect of slavery, that, like, in our history book, they just, like, skated over it. It was just like, oh, we done. I don't even remember what it was. 300 years, the next page, we on the whoever was the next president.
Right? And it's like, you know, you look at, like, in the 1800s, they had, the Chinese doing the railroads, and you see for, like, 2 seconds. But they don't talk about, like, how they treated the Chinese or, you know, people, especially now, they fail to mention how they put Japanese people in those camps after, you know, during World War II. And then so many other things. You know, they like to slide everything under the door. You know, that's why you have Texas, you know, don't want to let the teachers talk about race in school.
Tennessee either, girl.
I'm going to take myself back to Maryland.
Though, like, with everything that was happening with the hate crimes recently, hearing about the Chinese massacre of 1871 in San Francisco and the lynchings. And I remember hearing that and being like, wait, when I think lynching is only in the context of like Black people, and to hear of this large group of Asians, Chinese immigrants that were murdered and lynched and terrorized our community, terrorized, and then to hear about who were the terrorizers, not just white people, also Hispanics and stuff. It was just like, yo, like the complicated past of white supremacy, racism, and how it's affected different communities, even in the traumas being very similar, and how that never remotely gets talked about. Like, not even like remotely, not even like a hint, like, yes, these different communities were lynched. It's like, no, we don't even hear about that. And it's just kind of like there's like the, when we talked about Jesse's book and how, you know, Dre, we were talking about the whoever has power is the one who tells the story of history. And there's always a reason why certain parts of history are erased. And I love that as we're coming up on a generation that is finding out our information for ourselves and teaching ourselves and seeing what that produces. But it's painful to know that there's so many stories that have gone untold that would unify the different minority groups in an American setting to actually see changes happen and justice prevail that have just been like, not even just buried, like intentionally buried, but it's been wild.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what our generation and the generation after us, like, what we're able to accomplish. Because even if you look at what has happened, especially if you look at the people who are making the comments, a lot of them are older. And, you know, the younger generation is like, you know, everybody marched on Black Lives Matter. That's a whole nother conversation. But you know, some of them really, really believe that, like, this is wrong and we should fight for this. Let me engage in conversation with this person. Let me have a relationship with this person. And I think our generation, we're not about that fakeness. We're about real, authentic conversation and relationship. So I'm interested to see what our generation and the next generation after us does with the information that they are privy to, because we weren't privy to, like, we good and grown now, and we still learning about aspects of our culture, aspects of other cultures, and just American society and how white supremacy has affected that. Like, we was going to school just being indoctrinated with all this information to, in a sense, make us hate ourselves and hate other things that we're not white.
Love their wealth.
And I think that we're also in a time where being mixed is a lot more common. Mm-hmm. And I mean, people being mixed, yes, with like 2 and 3 and 4 different things. And so there's this kind of blending that is happening. I would say, especially amongst minorities, that I think hopefully will help some of these conversations or help provide unity in a sense to be able to see that, I mean, we should all be on the same side. I mean, honestly, there's like, how do I want to say this? I mean, it's like there's this main oppressive group and then it's like the rest of us. So, I mean, I think it's important to in some ways be able to see through that lens, because that's not, as we've described with some of these things that have happened, like that's not, it's very me and us and them and they, and but no, like to come together in a sense is very important. And I think with the blending of races being a lot more common now, I think that that's something that hopefully can help move us in that direction.
Yeah. And just like when you receive something to advocate on behalf of the others who did not. Another instance is like when the Japanese internment happened after World War II, after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and all the Japanese got put into concentration camp. They received reparations for that. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that Black people were enslaved, you know, and built this shit for free, where was the reparations? And to the extent that Japanese people received reparations, you know, it would have been nice to have a reach back and an advocation or advocacy on behalf of Black people to say, hey, they deserve that as well. And first and foremost, hello. So I think to the extent that we all, again, come together and realize that there's a reason why they are prioritizing who they're giving shit to and who they not. And but at the same time, you can't take your little handout and be like, oh, they see me, so I'm going on about my business. No, because at the end of the day, they still don't see you. And until we all are collectively, especially Black people, lifted up, all we all the same. Like we all not white, so we all, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and maybe in the
100%
in the generation of Naomi Osaka and her children, then maybe, you know, that bending of the two can come together. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Yeah. We're gonna look back and be like, you know, our little kids and grandkids, we're gonna be like, okay, what y'all doing out here?
we were part of this change. Because, you know, we're such a different generation from our parents. We're not, just complicit and with everything and just be like, oh, I mean, we better now. And it's just like, nah, I want this and I want this now. Y'all got to do better. And so, you know, Camille, you know, you read my little sister's papers. She's a Gen Zer.
Yeah.
And so who knows what her children gonna do?
Yeah. Well, I don't got no more questions. Y'all have any more questions?
No.
This
was great. Thank you for joining us and coming on. This has been great.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Well, yeah, you have taught us some things. We still mad, but we learned a few things.
Hey, look, you are entitled to be mad. That's the thing. You are entitled to those feelings.
Okay. Don't let anyone else tell you that you're not, because you are. You are entitled to have those feelings. Just don't attack Asian people. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Asia, for joining us in our convo today. You guys, this was a good conversation. I'm looking forward to more conversations like this in the future. But bye.
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 Bye. Bye.